So if someone were to say, give me a prediction 5 months from now, that's very difficult to do because it has to be perfect. If someone says, give me a prediction 5 years from now, you can actually do that probably easier because you're looking at more of a big picture. So we tend to look at the big picture and say, is it a big change or a small change? And how do we model that out 5 years? Because if it's a really big change, you're not paying for it today. And that's good. That's value. You're getting something pretty cheap.
Die Geldmeisterin, der Finanzpodcast mit Julia Kistner und mit Peter Möschter, Fondsmanager des bekannten Templeton Growth Fund, der seine Strategien verrät, mit denen er seit 2 Jahren das schwächelnde Flaggschiff wieder auf Kurs bringt. Er hat unter anderem die investierten Positionen von über 100 auf rund 50 reduziert. Qualität allein reicht seinem Team nicht mehr, es muss auch eine Wachstumsstory geben, weshalb sie vor allem von vielen Banken sich jetzt getrennt haben und er legt, wie allerdings schon Sir Franklin Templeton, viel Wert darauf, dass man nicht auf einen Trend um jeden Preis aufspringt, wenn man ihn nicht früh genug erkannt hat. Möschters Ansatz ist auch nicht unbedingt die erste Reihe zu kaufen, sondern Qualitätswerte, die vielleicht mehr in der zweiten Reihe stehen. Als Beispiel nennt er im Agrotech-Sektor die CNH-Gruppe statt John Deere oder auch die Kaufhauskette Target statt Walmart. Aber hören wir ihn doch am besten uns gleich im O-Ton an.
Thank you for being guest on Geldmeisterin. Would you please briefly introduce yourself? What have you done before managing Templeton Growth?
Well, I've been with Templeton now for 27 years. So I joined in 1997. I had some experience in the industry in Toronto. But at Templeton, I joined as an analyst and I spent some time as an analyst covering utilities and consumer goods and Canada, the US and Germany. But as a manager, most of my time has been spent on global and international portfolios. Mm-hmm. So international, where people have asked us to exclude the US, other times global. Mm-hmm. So my experience on global is really what led to my work on Templeton Growth Fund, because it's been something I've been doing now for 20 years mm-hmm. with Templeton.
Wow. Templeton Growth Fund is a quite huge fund. And also it's a really old fund already. Right. I think Franklin Templeton himself managed it in 1954 mm-hmm. when it was founded. Yeah. So, but what has changed so far in the type of investing?
Well, it's a long history. So there have been many people involved, but consistently through this time, it's always been valuation driven. Mm-hmm. And so the idea really is find the best opportunities in the world and then make sure that you're not overpaying. Mm-hmm. And also to look beyond the obvious. Don't just look at 1 year. Everybody looks at 1 year. Go out 3 years, 4 years, 5 years and ask the question, what does this business probably look like in 5 years? Is it significantly different or just a bit different? And how much do you pay for that? So I think the idea of what Sir John started many, many years ago is the same. Look for opportunities that other people aren't talking about and try to get there before they talk about them.
Okay.
And when they do talk about them, you own it already.
His thoughts were that you shouldn't jump on a trend, you should create one.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Now, we can't go back in time and see what it was like, but mm-hmm. It was quite different back then for investors. There was not as much competition. So if you were in an emerging market, you could find companies that nobody even knew about. Mm. Now you have the internet. People are aware of what's out there. It makes investing globally a little easier for everyone. More information is available, which is good. It makes it more competitive for all of us. So we have to keep refining what we do to make sure that we're actually competing, that we aren't just doing the same thing everybody else does. Mm-hmm. But many people do not do a five-year outlook.
You are managing now the fund since 2020.
Right? Yeah.
So Templeton Growth had problems since, I think, this crisis, the financial mm-hmm. crisis, yeah. 2009 or so on. The fund couldn't overperform anymore regarding the peer group. Mm-hmm. So what did you change right now?
It seemed like what we had done was we had got ourselves into a bit of a box where we were just buying slower growth businesses that looked like value, but they were value traps. They weren't growing. They looked cheap, high dividend yield or things like that, a low price earnings ratio, but also they weren't growing. We were missing out on companies that were reasonably cheap and were growing quickly. Okay, and I think it was just maybe the mindset we had got into that we got comfortable recommending banks, recommending telecoms. But when you really challenge it, there wasn't growth there. Okay, and what we had to do was step back, and this is something we started about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and it took a little while because we needed people in the group to change the way they looked at things and be more open-minded to new ideas and not just produce more of the same. Here's another bank. Here's another telecom. And so what happened was we started to encourage them, look into your sector and look for different ideas, maybe do a new sector. Okay. Valuations matter. So it's not a case of just buy anything. Okay. We do care. But come to us with ideas that maybe you think are a little bit different, but incredibly interesting. And after a year or two, we had a lot more ideas coming through the group and it freed up. By focusing less on the traditional repetitive ideas, they were had more time to actually look at new ideas that were quite creative and quite original. And that gave us more to focus on. And then when the pandemic hit, it took us about a year or so. We had to reposition the fund, but we were able to buy into new businesses, better quality businesses at good prices. Some of them were turnarounds, but the turnarounds were going to happen. The pandemic ends one day and you have a good business. And we were able to focus more on new ideas, fresh ideas, and also quality and growth at good prices.
But same side, you say size matters. So the fresh ideas have to come from the big players?
They're bigger companies in that sense. Well, we don't invest in small cap. It tends to be a bit small, but we are larger. But there's so many large companies around. And we can buy these positions, it's not a problem. But I think we were probably ignoring them before. We were not looking at them because they weren't quite as cheap as something else. Okay, but the something else, quite often those businesses were broken. So let's not look there anymore. We don't need that. Okay, instead, let's focus on the ideas that made the most sense. And so quality and growth, don't ignore the valuation. But don't put 100% of your thought into valuation. Look at the businesses. Is it a good sector? Some sectors don't grow very much. Some do. So be more open-minded to that growth, but don't pay too much.
And are the sectors which don't grow, can you give some examples? Did you throw them out of the portfolio or what did you do there?
Yeah, usually that's what happened. We had a lot of exposure. I think 20% was banks. And most of them don't really grow much. They have a lot of problems. And banking is very competitive. It's just not a great market. So we will hold a few banks now, but it's unlikely we'll have 20% in banks or financials. We had 10% in energy stocks, but they don't grow very much. Sometimes they do fine, the price of oil, the price of gas, but you don't need 10% of your portfolio in energy stocks. You know, so a few good holdings will do. And then spread the money around other investments. So more industrials, more consumer stocks, and more companies with growth potential, and they're on the right side of long-term trends. So if there's a trend to digital, industrials are spending money on digitization, so factories, automation. Make sure you have companies in that field as well. So maybe it's Hitachi in Japan, maybe it's Schneider Electric in Europe. But get those businesses. And make sure you're not ignoring them because they have higher growth rates.
But you reduced your positions from over 100 to 50. Yeah. So I just get you reduced the number of banks. Is there also other sectors or geographical areas which you reduced?
The biggest impacts were banks, energy, and telecom. That was almost 40% of the fund. Between them, almost 35 to 40%, and we reduced that substantially, and then we broadened out with more consumer, more industrial, and healthcare.
That is very interesting. That one third of your fund is consumer, cyclical and not cyclical. Why do we have such a high position in consumer goods.
Yeah, it's not because we started with that idea, but it became happened naturally. We do have some turnarounds. For example, in the U.S., we have Target, the big retailer. High quality, but also a turnaround. But the price was right. So that's almost 3% of the fund right there. And then in consumer, we have auto parts. Mm-hmm. That's considered to be discretionary. So some industries are grouped together under consumer. We don't think of it as consumer, but it is. Like auto parts are ultimately consumer driven. Mm-hmm. So they all end up in that category of consumer. But the underlying drivers are going to be quite different. Auto parts versus a U.S. retailer turnaround. Mm-hmm. So everyone's there for its own reason, but it turns out to be called consumer discretionary. Yeah.
So it has something to do also with COVID and the crisis, so that these consumption stocks have been quite cheap at this time too.
COVID and the pandemic is what got a lot of these companies onto our database, because these companies struggled. Either they struggled during the pandemic and they do okay coming out, or some of them did well during the pandemic and then immediately dropped again because they were beneficiaries of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we recently started we bought a position in a consumer company called Yeti, consumer goods for camping, very high quality drinking cups and things like that. During the pandemic, the business grew dramatically because people wanted that merchandise. And the stock went from, I'm for the exact numbers, but from 40 to 100. Mm-hmm. And now it's back to 40. Okay, so now we're interested. Because the company is very successful. It's as profitable now or more profitable. Mm-hmm. But the market has given, it doesn't care anymore. Mm-hmm. That was a pandemic stock. And you're like, yeah, but that doesn't mean it has to stop.
In our conversation before, you'd already mentioned that you were looking at the PE for 5 years, the forward PE.
Yes.
So could you repeat, how do you handle trends, like you made this example from the IT, but I also mean AI.
Yeah, so each model, each analyst will keep a model on their company. And what will happen is they'll go out annually each year and ask the question, what probably is the trends in revenues and profit margins? And what does that lead us with cash flow? So when you do the model, you find that cash flow is being generated, and that cash then gets reinvested in the business. So if someone were to say, give me a prediction 5 months from now, that's very difficult to do because it has to be perfect. If someone says, give me a prediction 5 years from now, you can actually do that probably easier because you're looking at more of a big picture. Mm-hmm. So we tend to look at the big picture and say, is it a big change or a small change? What's really going on in that business? And how do we model that out 5 years? Because if it's a really big change, you're not paying for it today. And that's good. That's value. You're getting something pretty cheap that will be very big in 5 years. And the model captures that. What to do about AI? AI is very hard to incorporate into a model. Like, what does it really mean? Most of it right now is expenses. You spend to get the ability to bring AI into your business. But in the future, it's going to be revenues. It's probably a lot of software companies. So Microsoft will probably charge every user, corporate, a lot of corporate business at Microsoft. And they will be coming to companies like Franklin Templeton and saying, you have 10,000 users and AI is embedded in your applications. You can get your data better. It's easier to access information, to create new information, but you have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And that access costs every user a little bit. And corporates will spend the money.
So you mentioned Microsoft. Do you think AI is, they are just a big player interested in this area because you don't know where to go?
I wouldn't buy Microsoft for AI. We have a small position now in Microsoft. It's done well. We bought it a few years ago. It's done well. We wouldn't chase it here. But it's a type of business that can benefit from AI. Mm-hmm. They spend money now. But in the future, they can charge for it. Like if people go on the internet now and use ChatGPT, does anybody really make money off that? It doesn't really cost much. Okay, but if you get a corporate license and you have thousands of users, and you, Microsoft can say, we've embedded it into the product, a service, and now you have to pay for it. Mm. Okay. We'll pay for it, because that's efficiency. We're going to get something back for that. That's an investment for the company to make, and we also will get a return on that investment. So gradually, I think the software companies will start to see the greatest benefits. They can charge through for what they are doing on AI, because big companies like ours will pay for that service.
Mm-hmm. Back to your strategy to reduce the number of positions in the fund. Is it also a reaction to the big boom of ETF that you have to be more than before a stock picker to be competitive to ETFs?
There definitely was that part of it as well. If we just want to do deep value, a client can buy the index. They can buy the value index, ETFs, index funds. They don't need someone like us to say, we have a new value index, here you go. They can just buy the one that's out there. If we can go to them and say, here's 50 or 60 stocks, and it's value driven, but we've decided what goes into that portfolio, we can compete better. Mm-hmm. Because that's not a value index. Mm-hmm. So yes, ETFs have changed the landscape. We need to make sure we're adapting. If we just have 100 stocks and they all look like the index, then why do you need us to do that?
You also said what you are buying. What are you not buying?
Well, I mean, a lot of things. what are we not buying? That's a harder way to look at it. I would say that we're being careful not to chase ideas. There has been a huge momentum rally out there. So we're not really buying much in technology right now. We have a decent weight in technology. And we would be careful, because there is definitely momentum and it's taken over. And you don't want to be chasing the same thing that everyone else is chasing. But for the most part, there's nothing out there that we won't look at. But we are going to be careful. China is a market that we're not buying much of right now. We may have one stock or something like that. We think that China, the economy, depends on housing. It depends on, this is years. This is a multi-year process that China has to go through to get its economy stabilized and growing more quickly. And we don't see why we should be investing in China unless there's a really good idea.
This is the reason why the percentage of Asia investments is quite small.
It's gone down, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you also said you are not investing in small caps with a market cap under 3 billion.
Yeah, about approximately. Yeah. They get too small.
Mm-hmm. But many analysts say this is the year of small caps. What would you say to them?
I think they've been saying that for a long time. I've heard that. Well, we agree to a point, though, but we simply cannot buy them. They're too small. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. And what we do, though, is we try to look for some company. Like Yeti, for example, has about a $3 billion market cap in the U.S., but it trades pretty well. Mm-hmm. And we can actually get a position there. But we're not. Our funds are bigger, and they're not going to be able to get all these small cap exposure. If that's what people are really looking for, they should look at the Templeton Small Cap Fund, because it's dedicated to small caps. Mm-hmm. And they can do that. That's the only thing they do is small cap. We really are larger cap, and we have some mid caps. I do like mid cap. Mid caps can do very well coming out of an earnings recession and outgrow in general. They can outgrow the broader markets. And so in the last 3 months or 6 months, our holdings have been influenced a bit more towards mid cap exposure. Mm-hmm. So maybe 4 or 5, 6 billion, that kind of a market cap, end up maybe up to 10 billion. These are companies that we can get a position in and make it meaningful. And these are also businesses that can do well coming out of an earnings recession.
Mm-hmm. One question, short-term political events like the US election, how does this influence a Templeton Growth Fund, which is looking at a 5-year horizon?
Yeah, you can't predict what will happen in an election and build a portfolio around it for one country. Yeah. It just doesn't work. So what we do is we try to look at it and say, if we are investing in these companies, how would they probably be impacted? Now, most are not impacted nearly as much as you might think, because mm-hmm. they're global businesses and the U.S. is just one market for them. Okay, but it does influence it to a point, because you might find that you might be a beneficiary. For example, there's a lot of pressure on companies to locate production back in the US, mm-hmm. or maybe Mexico, okay, but not in China. So who builds that factory? It has to be highly automated because US labor is expensive. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a highly automated factory, a lot of electrical, a lot of digital. So there are companies out there that can help with that transition. But it doesn't mean you buy Schneider Electric just because of that. But it doesn't hurt, mm-hmm. because chances are these big electrical companies and automation companies, Honeywell in the US, they have a big warehousing automation business. You don't buy Honeywell for that, but they probably benefit a little bit from some of these trends. The more the politicians talk about tariffs and taxing, the greater the likelihood that more production is centered on the US. Mm-hmm. But that gets spread out over many companies. Many different businesses are beneficiaries of that.
But you will wait until the election is voted? Is it already looking now where it's going to?
No, you do that now. But again, it doesn't make the decision. This mm-hmm. is not, it's really, these are global businesses that will mm-hmm. have many, many things going on around the world. But it helps you to make a decision. You say, are they benefiting from this trend or do they get hurt by this trend? Mm-hmm. Okay, in all likelihood, it doesn't matter who wins the election in the US, you're going to get tariffs. Okay, China, anything coming from China, there'll probably be a tariff on it. Businesses will continue to invest in the US because they have to be in the market to avoid those tariffs. And so you can make decisions now already, which will probably be fine no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. And then when the actual election, as you get closer to the election, it could be different politicians, like the Democrats might decide that to win some votes, maybe they have to talk tough. And maybe some policies start to go to the middle. Mm-hmm. Each party takes a bit from each other and they influences the way they speak about policies because they're trying to pull in those voters that are in the middle. So in all likelihood today, you can make decisions that will be probably pretty good based on the outcome of the election, knowing already now that the trend is a certain direction.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned before that there was a huge change in when the Berlin Wall falls in the 1990s.
Right.
If we look now in the geopolitical area, the Chinese wall is rebuilding. Right now you mm-hmm. mentioned Taiwan. So how does this change the way of investing, the new political area and the new blocks we are building right now?
I think it makes it much more difficult because 30 years ago, it was like a few golden decades. Every big industry, every big company will simply invest in Eastern Europe, in China, in Mexico, and take advantage of all the trade that was going to happen. And it happened. It worked well. Profit margins improved. Interest, inflation was low because of all the benefits of low-cost manufacturing. So now it's the opposite. You have higher-cost manufacturing. You don't have markets opening up as much. In fact, the opposite. You have to be inside that market to have access to that market. So it raises the cost of doing everything. So the best way is to make sure your companies are higher quality. They aren't dependent on any one market. They don't have bad balance sheets. If they have bad balance sheets, weak balance sheets, it means they're going to struggle to invest. Mm-hmm. They don't have the money to do it.
So quality matters more than before right now.
I think so. And then mm-hmm. just make sure you're not paying too much for that quality.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what are the main opportunities and challenges for your Fund 24, you think?
Yeah. So shorter term, I don't really look at it as being that kind of a time period. Mm-hmm. So I would say, though, that we're at a point now where it feels like, well, the way the fund is positioned, it's a blend. You have higher quality businesses, you have growth businesses that we bought at good prices. We have some defensive businesses that have some turnaround stories like Unilever or Danone or Anheuser-Busch, where they're big businesses, they're stable, and they also have a bit of a growth element to them. They're being transitioned. So we're well positioned where we are. What we don't have quite as much that we can still build on is cyclicals. And I think that's what I would look to. We've been starting to, and now we're looking more at that, is there's been so much focus on the top businesses, the biggest businesses, the Magnificent Seven, they call them. Well, that's fine. What about the other ones? What about the thousands of companies that aren't the top seven? And many of them are at very reasonable prices. And that's where we're looking. That's where the analysts are looking. We're not chasing the top seven.
Also not the granolas in Europe. This is GlaxoSmithKline, and this is the answer on Magnificent 17.
Okay, I don't know that one. No, we're not really chasing the theme, but I think if anything, I'd be looking more at cyclicals. Businesses that have been hit already with earnings recessions. Interest rates have spent 2 years working their way through. It affects businesses. And a lot of them have flattish, uninteresting. It doesn't mean the earnings have dropped, but some of them have. And these are probably more interesting because they're priced for a recession.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're a little bit more deeper cyclicals. It could be auto parts. It could be home builders in the UK, for example, where we've added exposure recently in the UK. Not the U.S. The stocks never sold off. The U.K., the stocks sold off a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we're looking more at. Cyclicals that have good fundamental businesses, and the stocks have sold off, and they're not part of any sort of Magnificent Seven.
If I summarize your style, dynamic value you mentioned, you call it, it's quality growth.
Well, it's a bit of everything. I think what it is, it's we're looking for growth always. We want growth. We don't want to pay for it. Okay, we're not just chasing growth.
Nobody wants to make.
No, but most people don't care too much. They just say to buy it anyways. Mm-hmm. Okay, you have to have criteria. What is a bargain, and what is an expensive stock?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to stick to that. Otherwise, you don't have a discipline anymore.
So what is your criteria, the PE, or what is the criteria?
It is PE. We don't discuss it, but we have a 5-year PE.
Mm-hmm.
So it's today's price, and it's earnings that are normalized over 5 years. It's just, and it's an approximation.
Mm-hmm.
And below a certain cutoff is a bargain. Above a certain PE is a sell.
Mm-hmm.
And so that way we can gauge it. Is it quite cheap, or is it quite expensive, or is it somewhere in the middle?
And now we have more bargains in Europe, as I got from you.
Europe tends to have more bargains, not as much in the U.S., but every country will have something, and that's why we don't have that many stocks to buy. We have 50 or 60. We just need a few all the time from our analysts coming through with new ideas, and so it's not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got a couple of thousand companies out there that we could be looking at.
You have 6% cash. Is this much or less than in former days?
It's bounced around a bit. It's we're down closer to 5 right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say 4 to 5 is fairly normal. And if anything, I'd like to see it at 2 to 3. But that means I'd have to be very good bargains.
Mm-hmm.
And we can bring that down.
I just asked if you think that 24 will be an interesting bargain chain year for investors like you.
We always like to think it will be. We just don't know. But I think there are new opportunities opening up, because when you get momentum, and we have just a huge momentum trade right now in the U.S. especially,
mm-hmm.
with the fear of missing out. Nobody wants to miss out. It leaves other stocks behind. And that's where you have to look. What's being left behind? And some of them deserve to be left behind,
mm-hmm.
and some don't. And that's where we need our analysts to go through it and say, there's some really good ideas being ignored by the market.
So in a time of fear of missing out, which we have right now, especially in the US, it doesn't mention that you don't invest. You just look for the ones left behind.
Yeah. And you want to have something in the expression we use is, you always want to have a horse in the race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so you want to have, we have Amazon, but we bought it 2 years ago when it was cheap. It sold off 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Alphabet, it sold off 50%. So our analyst said, now's the time to buy some of these.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they've done well. And so we did well by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But we also bought some other ones like Micron Semiconductor, who bought some Microsoft. But that's done.
Mm-hmm.
They've kind of done what we hoped. And now we have to look for the next race,
mm-hmm.
and make sure we've got that horse ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or you wait until the horse is getting back again, like Deere, you mentioned. You bought CNH and not Deere because
it's possible.
It's,
yeah,
expensive.
There's always going to be something that's looking interesting, and maybe it's technology again. Maybe they sell off, we get another
mm-hmm.
chance at them. But you want to keep a discipline on valuation. It's
mm-hmm.
not just a case of who cares, just buy it.
Mm-hmm.
No, we do care.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it matters.
And shares are always the best way for getting pension.
Over very long periods of time, yeah, you have growth and you can participate in growth. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you're just buying bonds all the time, there's a time for that as well. And other people can invest in bonds and do that. We're not bond managers. Mm-hmm. That's somebody else's thing. But we want to buy long-term growth mm-hmm. and enjoy above average growth rates. So for us, equities are the way to go.
So I wish you good luck, Mr. Möchter. Thank you very much for taking your time. And next time, I hope you take the weather with you from the Bahamas to Vienna.
I'll do my best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alles Gesagte ist nur die persönliche Meinung von Julia Kistner und daher keine Anlageempfehlung und keine Rechts- und Steuerberatung. Für Verluste, die aufgrund von getroffenen Aussagen entstehen, übernimmt die Autorin Julia Kistner keine Haftung.